Welcome back. Camera seems to be off a little bit. Well, good enough for government work. All right. I wanted to, I know that this voluminous Go show, and I get going on all these Go show, and they're so interesting and so in depth. Nietzsche's scholarship and his insights are incredible. But I don't want to lose sight of the more general discussion about our practice. So I look for suggestions from you guys. Please use the comments sections for that. And I've answered some questions about Gangyo before. But I think there's one, this one's maybe a little personal. I was doing Gangyo this morning and it occurred to me how really, since I began practicing in these 40 or so years that I've been practicing, the second of the silent meditations that we do at the end of each recitation in Gangyo, there's five, if you're not familiar. The second one, appreciation to the law of self-manifestation, it really sticks out for me in that it seems like that one meditation covers the entire practice of Buddhism. And because it's so packed with essential concepts of Buddhism, I think it's, you know, for many people, and you know, we can throw fault and blame in all sorts of directions. It's kind of useless to do that. I just want to say that because it's so compact, it's hard to unpack. You know, we humans, we tend, especially these days, we seem to just want to get through stuff. You know, we call ourselves practitioners of this or that or the other, and this goes to schoolwork, jobs, reading books or watching programs. Whatever endeavor we seem to just want to get to the completion. You know, now I don't mean just getting to the end of it so that you can wrap up your concept of the whole thing, but it seems like we forego the whole middle part. We don't care about we begin here, and how do I get to the end? Do I really have to navigate every single page, every single step of this? Just give me the end. It's really mind-boggling to me that our societies today seem to do everything that way. Just give me the punchline, right? Well, there's no participation, enjoyment, there's no savoring. It's like eating, even. You know, we sit down, the idea of sitting down and saying, okay, here's this presentation, I'm going to participate in each one of these savory things and contemplate how they feel, how they, the aroma, how they taste as I chew, the textures, how they, no, we just burger, boom, let me finish it. It seems to be like a shorthand of life and we're missing it. You know, life is in the savoring of these little moments. This is part of awakening your Buddha nature, I dare say, because as you awaken and become clear about what life truly is, what is that process, then you become much more acquainted with each wonderful moment rather than just rushing to the end. There's nothing in that. It's vapid. Anyway, all of that is to say that when we do Gangyo, really we should appreciate that we even can do Gangyo, that Gangyo is such a shorthand of experience to awaken our Buddha nature, our realization of how precious each moment is. And I think by the time we get to the prayer or the meditations at the end of a recitation, we're ready to get through it. Like we already know what it says. But I could spend a whole day on the second meditation. I solemnly praise the true law of self-manifestation, comma. Stop. What the heck is that? You could stop right there and we could have sutra text chases and exchange of ideas, and we could spend a month, you and I, exploring what does that mean, self-manifestation. In that simple portion of a sentence, we're calling up the 3,000 realms, Nidana, the life process, where do we come from, how does life originate, all the big questions. Why am I here? What am I doing here? What am I supposed to do with being here? Right? And this was the fundament of Buddhism. This was the fundament of what made Siddhartha Gautama say, WTF. What the foundation? Gotcha. What the foundation? How did this come about? And how is it that it has all these really difficult aspects? Really tough contests of survival and ideologies and all these sufferings. Why does life have that? Why do we have to experience that? And he came to that question from a very interesting point. His father, the king, made sure he never wanted for anything. He just lavished beauty on him all the time. He never wanted him to see the suffering of the common people. But Siddhartha was curious, right? Life can't be all this glory. Isn't that samsaric? Isn't that amazing? That having the opportunity to live a coddled life, it made him more curious about, this can't be all there is. And he was right. He went out and found out about all these different, it's history and folklore, and you can read all about it. But my point is, that to see the complete picture is enlightenment. To be attached to the complete picture is suffering. So how do you have both? How do you have, while you're in this human form, going through life with all of its sufferings, highs and lows, because sufferings aren't just lows, they're also ecstatic highs. There is no ecstatic high without a coming down, is there? So that's life, right? But if you can embrace the opportunity in that roller coaster to see it clearly without being so affected by it, that is your path to awakening. That is enlightenment. Walk this life. Enjoy what there is to enjoy. Suffer what there is to suffer. But distance yourself from it. It isn't all you. It is the massive play of life. And we are self-manifest because our mind, our samsaric human mind, is attached to this experience of life. And through those attachments, we form an identity of self. We're constantly, moment to moment, forming that identity. In that process of formations is the secret, if you will, the fundament of how life processes. If you can stop being mired and buried by it, and instead see it for what it is, it becomes an amazing experience. That perspective shift is what we're working to achieve, what we call Buddha wisdom, clarity. Don't be buried by the experience of life. See it as the experience of life that you have an opportunity to look upon. And if there are aspects of it that you find really unbearable, that's, you're seeing your karma. When you see that you're self-manifested, you see the origins of how you see yourself, how you experience your life. And if you don't like certain aspects of it, then you focus on that, take it to this mandala, chant to break through whatever creates that. Don't think you know what creates that. Don't even label it. Think about it as an experience. How can I cease the formation of that experience? That's the whole ball of wax right there. These are Shakyamuni's very words. Cease the formations. In that little piece of dialogue is the whole gambit of chanting for your enlightenment. What Siddhartha was trying to find was a methodology for living life to its fullest without being dragged into every little cause and effect that forces us to experience suffering. I want to get rid of the woe is me. I don't like that experience. It's not something you have, because that's about attachment. It's something you experience. So if it's something you experience, you can change your experience. You do it all the time. When I was a kid, I didn't like tomatoes. And later in life, I found tomatoes to be very enjoyable. I changed my experience of eating a tomato. How did I do that? Well, that's just the problem, isn't it? We're completely unaware. We're just falling and plummeting through life. How can we grasp some influence on this process? So that once we feel we're driving the bus, even if we have that same experience, or that same set of tendencies and conditions appears in our lives, we will experience it completely differently. Little by little, this is what alters our experience of life. This is what self-manifestation is about. How do I manifest these states of suffering? How can I cease forming the energies that combine to give me that experience? As a human being, I can see it through my perceptive capacity. So sometimes I will talk about how Buddhism is about developing our skills, having more control about how we perceive everything. Self-manifestation. How do I manifest this idea of who I think I am, along with my bunions? And I don't have bunions, but do you see think about what you think about. Think about how you actually see yourself. Forget your name. That's like way down the line as far as perceptions of self. Think about how you think. Think about who you really are. Who's doing that thinking for you? Or what is actually precipitating to give you these ideas of permanence? I am. Okay, maybe you am, but in a fraction of a second, you am something else. We continue to navigate this process of life. And we have lots of tendencies, and within conditions and conditions we set, that is how we create our perception of the world, which is ourselves. Because our world is what we perceive it to be. So it all comes back to this center. So how is that working? So I solemnly praise the true law of self-manifestation. Now, what is that saying? Now that we've had that conversation, the law is the process of life, Myoho Rengekyo. Simply put, it's the process of life. You're in it, but who are you in it? Why and what and where? What are the formations that create, or that you create, this idea of you? See, that's the law of the process of life. It's your creation. You're looking for a creator, it's you. It's not outside of you. So if you don't like what you're experiencing, once again, you have to kind of influence what it is that is giving you the perception, that is giving you an experience that you judge to be negative. That's not a way of erasing responsibility. In fact, it's a way of inculcating responsibility, because self-manifestation is driven by you and me. So if I don't like what I'm experiencing, you want to look for a source, it's you, right? We want to change that. We don't want to erase ourselves. We want to grasp how that's working. And sometimes it's so profound, all the time it's so profound, that our human mind can't get in, it can't penetrate deep enough to understand the myriad, thousands of innumerable influences that create formations that we can barely grasp, but we experience them. That's the part of the equation where we perceive. That's why we chant to our Guhanzon, to penetrate that consciousness, go deeper than that consciousness, where words no longer happen. It's about the actual energies that form, that amalgamate, that nidana, that come to name and form and influence and are experienced by us. We can't use words to get there, because that's way down the line of dominoes. How do the dominoes get formed? See, that's our samsaric barrier. But with Daimoku, we can penetrate that. And we know that it's the same for every form of life. That's why it's called a law. This is the way it works. You can argue all day long about why the brick fell down the side of the building and darn near killed you. But it's gravity. So you can wear a hard hat. You can stop the brick from falling in the first place. You can have better qualified bricklayers. You can make sure the bricks aren't set on the edge of the building. There are all these things you can do, but you can't get rid of gravity. I mean, that's an earthbound analogy, but do you follow what I'm saying? The law is the law. The process of life is the process of life. How will you participate in it? Because you, believe it or not, are here. So how can I use being here to see the grander picture without being all mired in my own little meanness, my self-manifestation, which I can modulate by awakening my Buddha nature? Then I become part of a much larger picture, not just woe is me. Let's finish the sentence. I solemnly praise the true law of self-manifestation, the core of the Juryo chapter of Honmon. What is that? That's the lifespan chapter. That is the chapter of the final teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha, Myoho Renge Kyo, where he drops the mic. Remember, you've heard me say that before. His drop the mic moment is, hey, you see me as a man who is a saint, who is imbued, who has discovered, who has found, who has revealed his maximal life nature, his Buddha-ness, and who trains you in achieving the same thing. But get this, what I achieved and what I'm teaching you to achieve has been here all along. It's nothing new. It's nothing you need to achieve. It's something you need to reveal, because it's already here. It's already the very formations of you and everything around you is Buddha, the clarity of that perspective is everything. And I'm going to turn it into, I'm going to formalize it into a very simple practice that every living being can do, instantiate, can do in this life to relieve the sufferings of this experience of life. Because greater understanding always leads to lessening confusion, to lessening distress, to abolishing it, really, because the experience of this life process is so amazingly huge that every little life suffering, just in perspective, just sort of gets minimized. It doesn't influence you anymore. It's, in fact, you celebrate it because of this opportunity, this amazing process of life that you can experience fully, not be buried by little minutiae within it. And that's another comma. The sentence isn't done yet. The supreme law hidden in the depths of the Lotus Sutra. In other words, within this chapter, this idea that Buddha is a life condition is the whole point of the Lotus Sutra, and thereby the point of Buddhism entirely. Yet another comma. We're not done yet. The inscrutable essence of the universe. The largesse of what the life process is. You don't get it yet. You don't get it that when you look out in the stars, that great time machine, that the light from that star that maybe stopped existing 100,000 light years ago, way in the past, is just now reaching your eye. It's a time machine. And we can look back to the cosmic background radiation, the original instantiation of all of this. Oh my goodness. We're seeing the formation of self, of this experience, all the way back 4 billion years. The life of this universe is an instantiation. And you can perceive every single bit of it. How do you even fathom that? Comma. The perfect fusion of Taiji and Qi. The perfect fusion of volition and energy, life energy, bioelectric energy, however you want to conceive of qi, the life force, which instantiates from a volition for it to instantiate. There's the original attachment. It's in the nidana. What is the fourth stage? Namarupa, name and form. There it is, attachment. Before anything else happens, before the Big Bang, before the gases, before the cooling, before matter collecting, before molecules, before atoms, will. Because without will, why bother instantiating? We're just potential. We're just non-stuff, nomina. That spark of, and boom, here you are. Self-manifestation isn't just your ego. So I think it's very easy to misunderstand that self-manifestation, well, that's just my ego, that's me thinking about myself. No, it's far more profound than that. Your origins are in that cosmic background radiation. How that's unimaginably immense. Getting clarity to that, that's awakening. We're not done. Still another comma. Sentence isn't done. The entity of time without beginning. Let's spend a month talking about that. Time without beginning. How can there be a beginning if there is no time? Time has to have a beginning. So if there's time without beginning, then what does that mean? Unpack that. See, the root of beginning is be. The moment something can be, time is happening, moment to moment. Why are there moments to moment? Because there's instantiation. And when something creates itself, by its very nature, the clock starts. Listen to I'm going to reference him and I can't remember his name. But he does the cyclic cosmic model of the universe. Oh, God, he's a British guy. What's his name? It's frustrating. I'll put it in the notes. Hopefully I'll forget. I'll remember to do that. Did you hear that slip? I'll probably forget. But you can't have being without time because that marks time. The very thing Shakyamuni is saying is your life is a series of little moments of instantiating. That is what we call being. If you're no longer being, then you're not here. That goes for you, me, and the entirety of the universe. And you hear it all the time from children and adults. Well, what was there before the Big Bang? How do you answer that question? Everything. Noumena. Before time, because there was no being, there was only potential. Dormant energy. And suddenly, Nidana, there's this idea, this combinatory idea. It doesn't even know it wants to be yet. It just sort of happens. These energies amalgamate and for nanoseconds. And then, you know, if there's a reason or there's some chemistry, something happens that those energies combine and another energy combines and they stay together, then maybe they lead to something. But in the meantime, they're just ideas. They're just potential. And they just fragment and fall apart. It's just a soup of potential. Just quiescent energy. Now, it could be as M-theory scientists postulate that these are like vast, vast sheets of potential that there are many of, and sometimes they brush against each other or run into each other. Those moments where tremendous, innumerable amounts of energy mesh, and some of them explode apart, some of them ball up together, and, you know, like a snowball, and those energies then manifest something. All of that is going on, and who knows how many universes there are, but the one we need to worry about is our experience, our being, which, as I'm saying to you, means that you, me, our pets, our plants are all originated from this potential at the same time as what we refer to as the Big Bang. We're all the same thing, that same combinatory energy, though all of us individually have complexities and different little aspects and tendencies and conditions of instantiating, of being. Just talking about it like this, as abstract as that this conversation now is, owning it as part of who you're manifesting, it's you know, we can talk about it in language, we can think about it abstractly, but being it is a whole different experience. This is the perspective of Buddhist cosmology. Can you quiet your attaching monkey mind enough to peer over the sal trees, the grove of trees containing all those monkeys, and look over the horizon and see your true nature, your true being as a source of sight to the true nature of what it is to be? All of this, and we're still not done with the sentence. The entity of the Buddha of absolute freedom. Now do you get what that means? The entity of the Buddha, the insight, not a man, not a philosophy. The entity, you, your mind, your perception, completely clear Buddha mind of absolute freedom. Of course it's absolute freedom, because if you can see that huge picture, then the little thing that you call self, it's no longer bound by your self manifestation. When you understand your manifestation to be an extension of, part and parcel of, this massive process, you're no longer bound by your eyesight, your skin color, your socioeconomic status, do you get it? That's a different self. That's a manifestation of a Buddha, comma, the eternal manifestation of the 10 worlds. What's eternal mean? Time without beginning? See, there's a lot of repetition in this, all circling around the same idea. This is why Nietzsche seizes on the lifespan chapter. That's his central teaching. In that chapter is where he gets the rush of this. Time without beginning. The amazing instantiation of what we experience as a self, but with our minds, we can pierce that egocentric physical instantiation and perceive into the complete process of life, of which it's like swimming in the ocean, realizing you are the ocean and every wave is yours and that you are part of this massive thing. It can be scary. That's so huge. But this is the fact of the matter. 10 worlds are, what are the 10 worlds? They're life conditions. We, in our self-manifestation, this speaks to our experience. How do we, human, samsaric human, experience life? The 10 worlds, the states of being, the way we suffer. And each one of those states has Buddhahood in it. If you know anything about the Ten Worlds, it's about this self-manifestation. Again, same thing. Kama, the embodiment of Ichin and Sanzen. Ichin and Sanzen, 3,000 realms. This energetic reality that came from potential with an idea instantiated, and every being comes from it. Ichin and Sanzen, that massive, innumerable, incomprehensible process that leads to all life, and certainly yours and mine. Ichin and Sanzen. 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. These things are difficult to really embrace and understand. Namo Myoho-renge Kyo, friends. That's how we get to understanding them. And guess what? It's another comma. The oneness of person and law. Saying the same thing again. Person, yourself manifested of your being from part and parcel within this massive process. The law, Myoho-renge-kyo. The manifestation of all phenomena as both a reflection and a result of my own making in this universe. Isn't that what I've been saying? We finally get to a period. This is just several avenues to penetrate this idea, because it's so difficult to understand. Oh, wait, who said that before me? That's right, Shakyamuni. This teaching is the most difficult to understand. It's all in that sentence. And this is why this meditation is called an appreciation to the law of self-manifestation. Because to appreciate the immense grandeur of this process, this statement, is to begin to practice correctly. I also give thanks for the immeasurable benefits I've received. Kind of like tosses that in at the end. Because once you start to go down this route, you realize how much fortune you have in your life. Second meditation. You could spend a lot of time on that. But understand, every bit that you study, no matter what aspect of this you're looking into, every sutra that you read, every commentary, every time you chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, that's what you're doing. So you see, it isn't as massive and incomprehensible as it first appears, because you have a tool. Shakyamuni gave us a tool. Nichiren gave us an expedient tool for our modern minds. He has this perfect distraction for us to take our human mind and focus it on, so our perception can peel away all other distractions, and then we invoke Myoho-renge-kyo, our timeless being. Sorry. And we open that vast field of perception. And all of it comes back to self perception. What we truly are, rather than what samsara says we are. Right? I know this is a big one, and we could talk about it some more, but I thought it certainly was worth a longer discussion. That's why I wanted to make this video. This is just to talk about the second meditation of Gongyo. If you have questions, ask them. We can dig into this all. I can make many more videos. We could do a whole series of videos simply on this one meditation. Why? Because I'm telling you, it contains everything. Just as Nietzschean, and maybe that's the way we research it. We look for discussions by Nietzschean on the lifespan chapter. And we've already covered several. He brings it up many, many, many times. This is the content of the lifespan chapter, Myōhōren Geikyō. And with that, I'm going to let me go. And, well, I still have a lot of Gosho to read, so that's what the next one will be. But I thought this was an important one to talk about. It comes up in questions from different paths. Sometimes it's just a question about what is this thing called self-manifestation? It's a good question. It's prescient in a way, because in that question is the seeking mind to know the experience of your Buddha nature. Namo Myōhōren Geikyō. Thanks for being here. You know I appreciate you. Download the podcast so that you can listen to this whenever you need to get back to it. The Buddhahood podcast. I'm still stumbling on the title. You can find links to it, of course, on the end cards and the beginning cards on this video. Also, on my website, threefoldlotus.com. Take care of your health. Take care of your practice. Appreciate your practice. It's amazing. See you in the next one. Bye.